My Mac Podcast number 148. We're going to kick off the show this week. We've got a trifecta of guests. We have John Nemirovsky. Hi, John.
Hi, everybody. Glad to be back.
Yeah, it's you haven't been on the actual show. I mean, you had a segment, Book Bites Live, but you haven't been with Chad or Guy or me for a long time.
I just did it once when I was testing my new Samson microphone. Once again, I want to thank Samson Technologies for providing the microphones and the headphones, both for Robert Hazelrig and for Mr. Nemo.
And we have Russ Walkowicz. Hi, Russ.
How's it going, gang?
I'm doing great. It's been a while since you've been on the show as well.
About 2 months, I think.
Has it only been 2 months?
At least in my time span.
Boy, it seems like it was a lot longer. I don't know why. And someone new at MyMac.com, Tommy Thomas. Hi, Tommy.
Hey, gang. What's up?
Good. Now, you write for another site as well, correct?
Yes, I write for Low End Mac. I write the Welcome to Macintosh column. It's pretty cool over there.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of Low End Mac. Been reading it since they started at Mac Times, back in, 1997?
Yeah, it just shows you how old we are.
Now, Tommy, you're relatively new to writing in the Macintosh, correct?
Yes, but I've been an Apple fan for a good long time, just didn't get to the Mac until much later.
What drew you to the Mac? I mean, you've been a computer fan, obviously. What made you finally get a Macintosh?
Well, I had always liked Apple and enjoyed what they put out, so I just thought one day that it'd be cool to find out about the other side, and being that I didn't really know the Macintosh existed, a good friend of mine, Sean, who, if he's listening, hey, but anyway, I talked to him, and we struck up a conversation about Apple, and he said, have you ever tried the Mac? And I said, no, I haven't. So he gave me his Quadra 650, and the rest was history.
Yeah, the old Quadras were good machines. I had a 950 for a while. Years out of date, but it was still a nice machine.
My first Mac was an Indigo iMac, which I still have, and it just, the simplicity of the Mac, it just drew me to it, and I've just been a fan of it ever since.
What processor does that one have, Tommy?
Well, the original one I had was a 350, but it developed video problems about 5 or 6 months after I bought it. So after three unsuccessful repairs, they replaced it with a slightly upgraded model, which was a 400 megahertz G3.
And that awesome. Actually can run Tiger. That 400 iMac can actually run OS 10.4.
I just recently put Tiger on it. It runs a combination of OS 9.2.2 and Tiger. So it's a pretty cool setup. It's got 256 megs of RAM on it. So it's pretty cool.
Now, does it worry you that you're not going to be able to run Leopard when it comes out?
Nothing's really worrying me on that front because I'm not quite sure how my most recent Mac will really handle all of Leopard. I'm not too concerned about going to Leopard right away. Wait till they get the bugs out of it. I have a Mac Mini, that's Intel Mac Mini that I purchased last year, so it's my main Mac, and it should be able to run Leopard when the time is right.
Absolutely it will. What about you, Russ? You going to upgrade to Leopard as soon as it comes out, or are you going to wait for a while?
I'm looking to upgrade. Of course, I just come in under the wire here, because I've got my 867 dual processor here. So 67 is my lucky number now.
Yeah, that's. I think it says 800 megahertz G4 is the lowest you can go, right?
That's it.
Yeah, so you're just getting under the wire. I don't think Apple made very many machines lower than yours that's going to be Leopard compatible at all.
Very, very few.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to probably upgrade right away. I'm a little hesitant because Apple hasn't done real well, I don't think, lately on upgrades for software. And, of course, I'm talking mostly about the iPhone, the 111 update to the iPhone. Bricked a lot of phones, and not just the ones that were unlocked. Reports now are that a high percentage of unlocked, unhacked iPhones were also bricked with the 111 upgrade, including mine. It wasn't completely bricked, but I'm still having problems with it. I can't plug my iPhone into a dock via a USB hub. It will not sync. The only way I can't use a dock at all, if I use a dock, and it's the iPhone dock, if I use that, it will not sync with the G5. I have to run a FireWire or a USB cable directly to it from the front of the Mac. That's the only way it'll sync. So I'm not real happy with Apple lately with their quality control when it comes to upgrades, software upgrades. Has anybody else been having any kind of upgrade problems? Not necessarily the iPhone, because I think I'm probably the only one here that has an iPhone right now, correct?
I asked my daughter about this because she's had an iPhone, and she has a couple of custom, I think, ringtones on there. And so she decided not to do the upgrade at all. So she's just staying with the original software, and then she's going to take those custom hacks or whatever they are off before she does her upgrade.
Well, the custom hacks really, those kind of hacks really aren't bricking the iPhone. From my understanding is the only time it's bricked as far as third-party stuff is the SIM unlocks. That's where the problems are coming in.
Oh.
Ringtones, because see, what happens with the iPhone is when it updates, it literally erases the entire phone, all the software.
Oh.
And it reinstalls a fresh copy, and that's why some phones are getting bricked.
So that's what you were talking about with our buddy Paul from Audio Hijack Pro and Rogue Amoeba last week.
Correct. It was literally erasing everything and reinstalling. And the iPhone and the iPod Touch actually talks to iTunes differently. All the hacks that worked before on the 1.1.1, well, the previous, 1.0.2 iPhone software and iTunes software is, they would actually, these other applications would pretend that they were iTunes, and that's how it would get installed on the phone. And iTunes would basically go, hey, you're an iPhone. Hi, I'm iTunes. And the iPhone would say, hi, I'm here. Well, it doesn't work that way. Now it's very simple commands and knows if it's iTunes or not. And that's why all the hacks aren't working that people are using, such as ringtones. And I'm kind of depressed about the ringtones not working myself because I had a really cool Darth Vader one that would sound when my wife called, and it doesn't work anymore, unfortunately.
Hey, Tim. You mentioned you've updated your iPhone to the latest firmware. Can't you downgrade? I've heard of some people downgrading.
I've heard that it's possible, but quite honestly, I like the new features in 1.1.1. I like the Wi-Fi iTunes store. I like the new shortcuts. So there was no third-party applications and no ringtones that really significant to me that would make me want to go back in time with the iPhone. I like the new features.
That's cool.
But I am a little disappointed that the quality of the 1.1.1 upgrade has made it so I can't use docks. I can't use a USB hub to plug it into. That's a little bit disappointing.
And I can see why.
I'm really hoping that the upgrade path to Leopard 10.5 is going to be much more smoother than the latest upgrade to the iPhone and iTunes because, you know, Apple doesn't need any more bad press.
Amen to that.
So do you guys, anybody has any ideas when macOS 10.5 is coming out? A lot of people are saying October 26th. That's, I believe, the day after the conference call when Apple releases their quarterly numbers, correct?
Yeah, that's the date that I've been telling people, but I mean, it'll be here before we know it, so we don't need to think about it too hard.
Oh, so you started
that word.
Go ahead, Russ.
So it was John that started the rumor that it was coming out on the 26th then.
No, I don't start any rumors.
No, the reason I'm going to get it is because I was a lucky lotto winner for Apple when it came to the rebate for the iPhone early purchasers. I got my $100 Apple Store credit right here in front of me. And I'm looking at it, and it doesn't say that it expires, but I'm a little worried that it's going to eventually.
Oh, it's not going to expire anytime soon.
No, not anytime soon. But Leopard is coming out this month. It's going to be $129. With that, I'm only going to have to spend $30 to get Leopard plus Michigan sales tax, so I'm quite happy about that.
That was going to be my next question, if you had ever gotten your refund.
Oh yeah, as soon as it went live, I jumped on there to make sure that there was no problems that I was going to be able to get mine. I was an early adopter in that I bought it like 3 weeks after it came out. I didn't wait in line. I don't think I'll wait in line for anything, to be honest. But do you guys think that's a little crazy for some people to wait in line for some of the new gadgets that come out? They did it with the 360, with the Wii, with the PS3, with the iPhone. Nobody. It doesn't seem like anybody waited in line for the Touch, though.
No, they didn't have to. No.
Well, and Apple didn't release a release date for it. They didn't say, "Okay, this is the day you can get the Touch." It was just kind of trickled out. And
yeah, I was at the Tucson Apple. I was at the Tucson Apple store, and I just happened to be getting a tech support question, and the guy was kind of handing another guy, a customer, a Touch sort of low profile so that other people couldn't see it. And he says, "We're just literally, we've had pre-orders. We're just literally handing them out in ones and twos as they come in," because he says next week we'll have more than enough and we'll be able to give them to everybody in town.
You know, that brings a question of mine about the Touch. If Apple had released that prior to the iPhone, would that have done better?
Well, that's assuming that the Touch isn't doing well now. I think the people that are buying the Touch are those who thought, I don't need a new cell phone. I'm happy with either my carrier or the cell phone I have, or that the iPhone itself was just too much money, and they were going to hold out for a Touch anyways.
I don't think the Touch is flying off the shelves. I think it will start to do so as the product matures and as the capacity goes up. I think my hunch is it's a few hardcore types who want the Touch who didn't want the phone, but it's just my anecdotal observations at local Apple stores.
Well, has Apple even had any advertising at all for the Touch?
Not that I've seen, but that doesn't
mean... I've seen their new On the Streets of New York iPhone commercials, but I haven't seen anything on the television about the Touch at all. Tommy, have you seen any?
I think there's a lot. As far as the iPod Touch goes, I think a lot of people saw the big hoopla over the iPhone. When the iPod Touch came out, a lot of people were like saying, okay, what's the, I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people that saw the iPhone and then they see the iPod Touch, they say, okay, what's the big deal? It's an iPod without the phone. So I think that has something to do with it. I think the revolutionary part of it kind of faded after the iPhone.
Took a little luster off of it?
Yeah, it took the shine off of it, but I haven't seen any commercials, but I think this really will appeal to a lot of people. I've heard a lot of people say they will get it sooner or later because they just, frankly, they don't need the phone included with it, so it's good for them, and it'll be good for the company once it takes off. But I am a little bit surprised that they're not marketing it to some degree. I mean, they marketed the heck out of the iPhone, but the iPod Touch, it's like, who cares? It'll sell itself.
Yeah, it seems kind of like that the Apple's maybe hoping that it will sell itself. Do any of you plan on getting a Touch or a new iPod in the future, in the immediate future?
I just got an iPod last week, and gotcha. I got the 80 gig classic.
How do you like it?
I think it's terrific. I took it on my short trip to Chicago to visit my dear mother, and I used it a lot, and the battery life is sensational. The sound, as you've mentioned, Tim, the sound actually gets better. I don't know how they do it, but even using the same headphones, the audio actually improves as the generations of the iPod improve. And the reason I got this is because my 30 gig four-button...
That's a third generation?
Yeah, third generation. That's right. The same one of Chad's that has given up the ghost.
No, his was a fifth generation. Or no, a fourth generation.
Well, anyway, I have a third generation, the one with the four buttons at the top.
Yep.
At a certain point, that thing is going to start to croak. And my wife happens to be taking a long trip. And instead of loaning her my iPod, it would probably expire somewhere between here and O'Hare Airport.
Yeah, of course.
I wanted to give her one that had a long, long, long battery life. And so that's basically what I was testing on this short trip of mine. And the battery life and the audio quality are sensational. It is a little bit less responsive because it has to bring in the cover flow whether you need it or not. And I'm hoping at some point you'll be able to have an on-off toggle switch to be able to turn off that cover flow, but I doubt it.
Hey, John.
Have you upgraded it to the latest iPod software? Because
yes.
My understanding is, yeah, I heard that improved the responsiveness of CoverFlow on the new iPod Classics drastically.
Okay, I just did that last night, and I haven't used the iPod since then. Thank you. I'll be using it tomorrow. So hopefully...
Write a blog post about that. Let us know via the blogs if it if it made a significant difference or not.
Okay, hey, but John, one sec, Tommy, before you come in. I just do want to say, for $250, the 80 gigabyte iPod Classic is a screamingly good deal, and I'll just leave it at that. And I'll let you know more about it once I've used it more. But so far, I've got three thumbs up for that thing.
Tommy?
Hey, John, you brought an interesting question of mine when you mentioned the Classic, because I've heard a lot on the internet from people that's bought it with the new UI that's on the Classic, and it, and with CoverFlow, new menus and things. A lot of people say it's, or the people that I've heard say that it's less responsive. How sluggish is it compared to something like your old one, or for those who have it, have had a 4G or a 5G, what are the differences between this and the Classic? Is there any noticeable drop-off?
Yes. Remember, I haven't used the new software, but let's pretend that the new software hadn't been released. The difference is when I click on something to happen, either go to the next song or whatever, there is a noticeable lag, whereas on... To me, to my observation, all of my previous iPods and the ones I've used, when you click to go to the next whatever, it just goes to the next whatever. So it's noticeable, but it's not objectionable. To me, the advantage of having that fantastically high-capacity, beautiful screen with that nice brushed finish far outweighs any lag in cameras. We call it shutter lag. I guess we call it iPod lag or cover flow lag. But the...
No, I know...
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I was going to ask you, John, I know that you were a fan of the iTalk from Griffin.
Yes.
That does not work with the new iPod Classics, correct?
I haven't tested it yet.
Yeah, my understanding is it probably won't.
Okay.
Do you think that's a problem that Apple releases ostensibly the same iPod with higher capacities and cover flow, but yet all these docks and audio out and, well, not so much audio out because that's working, but the video out options that a lot of other companies released for the iPod is no longer working.
I think
that they literally changed the dock pins on the newer iPod Classics. Do you think that's a problem?
I think it's a serious problem, but it's one of these things. At a certain point, you got to forget the past and move on to the forward. It's just you got to forget about the floppy drive. And it's annoying to the people who have legacy equipment, and I've been caught in that downdraft also. But the biggest problem is that the company needs to be upfront about it and to let you know before you fry something or you get frustrated or you end up spending an hour on tech support. It's not the technology shift that's the problem. It's the lack of full disclosure that's the problem.
You agree, Russ?
I think it's called planned obsolescence.
Yeah.
Why let you continue using a piece of old equipment when they can make you pay for a new one?
Yeah, do you think that the software vendor or the hardware vendors that are supporting the iPod with some of these third-party hardware solutions to get video from your iPod to your TV, do you think they're really upset with Apple of obsoleting their old hardware because now they're going to have to sell you some new hardware? I don't think they're probably upset about it at all.
No, but the customer is. I mean, how many times do you have to go out if you use your iPod and you exercise? How many times are you going to have to go out because they've changed the armband or the size, so you have to go get a new one now?
Well, that's a little different than an iPod that physically looks exactly like the previous generation, but there's a bunch of hardware that no longer works with it for... In my opinion, no good reason. There's no reason that Apple had to change the pin on the dock on the new iPods so the video out doesn't work the way it did. I don't see any technological reason why they would have done
that.
Other than planned obsolescence.
For those that don't know, and I'm sure all of you do, but I just wanted to mention, being that you brought this up, I'm sure this is the same thing you're talking about, but with the new iPod Classic, and I think with all the new iPods, I know on the Classic it's like this, but the TV out has been permanently disabled unless you get the new specified Apple cable, which is, what, $45, I believe?
Well, that, and again, that's because they changed where the video out is coming on the dock, on the pins. It's different now.
I know some...
But here's the funny thing. A lot of people assumed that the audio out has been changed too, and they haven't. So if you have I have like the, the iCar Play, iCar Play, whatever it is, from Harman Kardon in my vehicle. I use that for the last couple of years to listen to my iPod, so it's directly plugged in. That way I don't have to use an FM transmitter. That sounds horrible. It's just plugged right into the radio, and I can control the iPod through that unit. And the iPhone actually works with it, which I was hesitant to plug it in at first. I thought, oh, man, if this isn't going to work, I don't want it to blow my iPod or, my iPhone or anything. But I figured if it did, I can just take it back to Apple and go, hey, I don't know, it just stopped working. But it works fine. I can go forward, back, pause. I can't change playlists or anything like that, but that's something minor anyways, because I'm usually listening to a podcast or two, and that's not a big deal. But it works, and I think that's fantastic that Apple would put that backwards compatibility. So if they're going to do it with the audio, if they're going to keep the backwards compatibility there for the audio, why not the video?
I've read where some teachers in education feel they use their iPods and connect them up to televisions, projectors, and things like that to showcase things, because iPod's pretty popular in education too, and a lot of teachers are upset because of the TV out being disabled.
Yeah. Of course, there's going to be no shortage of used iPods that you could pick up that will work just fine with those third-party peripherals as well. I mean, anybody who buys a new iPod and they have their old one that works just fine, even if the battery was going bad in it, you can replace the battery in an older iPod and it's going to work just fine.
I just recently replaced the battery on my third-generation iPod, and the hardest part about it was getting the case open.
Yeah, it's kind of a harrowing experience.
Yeah, fortunately,
isn't it?
David Weeks had done it once or twice before, so I let him be the surgeon. I was the executive chef, I guess, so I handed him the battery. But once we got the darn thing open, it was really very straightforward.
Well, I tell you, a lot of people were upset that it's not easy to replace the battery in the iPods, and we won't even get into replacing the battery in the iPhone. But I've got three iPods here. A first generation, a fourth generation, and a fifth generation, and I've never had to replace a battery in any of them. You would think by this point that the first generation at least would have to have a new battery put in, and I used it all the time, but I just plugged it in for the first time last night. Believe it or not, I haven't used the first generation iPod in forever. I plugged it in last night via FireWire. It synced up just fine with the new iTunes. It transferred the songs that it needed to. I think the only thing that's on it is my 4 stars and above music. No podcast, no nothing like that. Just that music. It synced up like another 50 songs that I had changed the rating on since the last time I plugged it in over a year ago. It charged it all the way up because the battery had died, sitting there for a year. Charged all the way up. Took about 2 hours, 3 hours. I unplugged it, plugged a pair of headphones in, hit play, and it worked great. It's that first generation iPod, which is what, 5-6 years old at this point, and it works great. It's, if I didn't know any better, if I didn't know what the new iPods could do, I would be just as happy with that today as anything else.
How many songs on that iPod?
How many songs? Let me turn it on and find out. It's a 20 gig unit. Let me see. The screen kind of sucks compared to the new ones. let's see. I think it's settings, and you go down. I'm trying to find out how many songs are on this without actually plugging
it in. Just press play, and it'll tell you how many tracks there are.
Oh yeah, that's true. Let's just hit play, and it's got 1,027 songs on it. And right now, it's playing Roadhouse Blues from the Doors, and it works great. And I can't complain about it at all. And I kind of like, can you hear that at all?
Yes.
Yeah, that's no headphones plugged into it. I kind of like the physical click wheel that this one had, the first generation had, over the new ones. And there's something attractive about the raised menu buttons and that sort of thing on the original iPod. There's something neat about it that I like. Maybe it's just a classic look now that you just don't see that, but It's still a really nice unit. In fact, I watched a couple months ago the video unveiling that Apple did with the original iPod. And it's still a nice unit. It really is.
You brought up a good point, Tim. On the website, I've recently reviewed something called the Orb M Station iPod Speaker. And that review is at mymac.com on the feature side, three or four from the top. What MStation has done, I haven't seen this in any of the other third-party speakers and docks, is they actually still put in a FireWire, regular FireWire 400 connector. All the other iPod speakers and docks that I've been reviewing and I've seen have only the USB connection, and I want to congratulate MStation for keeping the FireWire iPod people happy with that built-in FireWire dock.
I would really like to see stats. I don't know if anybody's ever gone out and collected any stats like this. I'm sure Apple has them, but how many first and second generation iPods are still in use today? Hey, anybody want to bring Guy Searle into the conversation?
He just sure, why not?
Yeah, let's bring him in. La la la, it's going to ring. It's thinking about it. And it says connecting. Oh, and it says redirected to voicemail. Wow, that was weird. Let me see. Want to jump in, Guy? Quality podcasting moment here. It looked like actually he fell off, so we'll see if he
has any.
So that my question. Go ahead.
That was me. Speaking of iPods, okay. Did you guys catch that story last week about
the exploding one?
About the teenager that got the iPod for her birthday from Target?
Oh, and got a brick in it or
rocks.
Something? Rocks. That's the second time that happened.
And what wound up happening was they called and said, you know, look, at there's rocks in this box. You know, we want our money back. And they were told, no, you can't get your money back because they paid whatever. They had to go to the store. They didn't have any more, but they called around and found another Target 20 miles away that had the iPod. They drove the 20 miles. They were made to pay again with the credit. They opened the box in front of the salespeople, and there's rocks in it.
Wow. Wow, I wonder where that's getting picked up then. I mean, I wonder where the rocks are being exchanged for the iPod.
Is this some kind of somebody's a sick idea of a cruel joke?
I think somebody's making money on the side because they're delivering the iPods, but in reality, all they're getting is the box, and somebody's selling them out on the side.
Which model is it?
It was a girl, correct? Okay, because I was going to ask if maybe the person's name was Charlie Brown.
Nah, don't think so.
Okay, Guy, are you here?
No, I don't.
Yes,
think
I'm
so.
Here.
Hey, Guy, what's going on, brother?
Hey, it's another glorious, glorious day.
Isn't it?
What are you guys talking about?
We were just talking about rocks in iPod boxes.
Rocks in iPod boxes.
From Target.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, that's always a bummer. And I was asking the question that I wonder if anyone's ever taken a poll, and I know Apple probably has that data, but I wonder if anybody has a poll of how many first and second generation iPods are still in use, those who bought the original iPods and they've never upgraded. They're continuing to use them. Because I pulled out my first generation 20 gig iPod, plugged it into the G5, and it synced just fine after a year of non-use, charged up, and it works just great.
And it's a 20 gigger? Yeah. Did you say 20? Did they make a first gen 20 gigger?
Maybe it's a second generation then. I don't know. It says 20 gigs. I don't remember if it's first or second. Yeah, because it wasn't the first generation. It was only 5 gigs.
I think the first one were 5s and 10s.
Yeah, so this has got to be a second generation, which I think the only difference is they just put a bigger hard drive in them.
Yeah, and it's got, the 4 buttons across the top?
No, that's the third generation. That's what John Nemo just got done replacing. Correct, John?
Yes, I'm not replacing. I'm adding to my collection.
How many iPods do you need?
Well, he's got a wife and a daughter and himself, so that's at least 3.
You got to listen to the first part of the podcast,
right,
Guy, to hear what.
So
okay, everyone, rewind.
You know what? Here's the thing: we've got literally 6 5 people on the podcast. I don't think, Guy, that we've ever had 5 people all at once, have we?
Not that I know of. See, we got Russ. Who's a classic?
Oh, that's Tommy Thomas.
Oh, hey Tommy. Guy. I don't think we talked.
Hey, guy. What's up? What's going on, bro?
Yeah, dude, what's going on, man?
Yeah, man.
So here's an interesting statistic. Well, interesting numbers that I pulled off the web today. And I thought that this was pretty interesting. When Tiger came out, which was released April 29th, 2005, which was quite a long time ago. We were podcasting then because the week before we had Dr. Mack on talking about Tiger before it was actually released.
I remember that.
At the time, April 29th, 2005, Apple had 12 million active OS X users. So that had to have been a machine that ran OS X, and they were upgraded to at least 10.1, I would imagine. So that's a lot, 12 million users of OS X. When Leopard comes out, most are saying October 29th, there are 23 million OS X users. So
that's significant.
It's almost double. So within, what, 2.5 years, Apple's doubling the number of people using OS X?
I don't know if they're doubling the number of people. How many people were either on a previous version and never went to Tiger or were still using God forbid OS 9?
This is active OS 10 users. When Apple released 10.4 Tiger, there were already 12 million users of OS 10. So that had to have been 10.3 and lower.
Right.
This time, there are 23 million people. Well, not
23 million computers.
Yeah, they're saying users, but I would imagine that's probably computers.
Yeah, because, I mean, hell, I've got three or four here in the house that are all running.
Between the five of us, we probably account for 30 of those machines. You know, so I wonder how that translates into true market share. How many Macs are going to households that were probably running Windows when Tiger came out? I'm assuming quite a bit. I think that Apple's market share is growing more significantly than most people know.
I think it's probably growing more significantly here in the United States, but worldwide, overall usage has remained relatively flat.
How many here know somebody that was a Windows user before and recently switched to Mac? Let's start with Russ.
Not very many.
Not very many?
No. In this area, they're kind of clickish,
and Windows is the click of choice.
Windows is the thing.
Yeah.
You say the word Mac, and they're thinking macaroni and cheese. You know, it's never a computer. And they wouldn't go anywhere near it.
What about now, John? You do a lot of in-home consulting, correct?
That's right, and I average one switcher a month of people that I'm helping who for any given reason switch over from Windows to Mac. So it's absolutely enormous. And Tucson is a very, very strong, Arizona in general, but Tucson is a very, very strong Macintosh community.
You guys still have a very active and very strong user group community too, correct?
We have a wonderful group, tmug.com, and you're talking to the lead trainer right here.
I've always heard that Arizona was almost a Mac mecca. So I take it that that is true.
Well, we've got a few Windows people left, but the Mac community is very strong. And there's an upscale shopping mall here called La Encantada. And on any given day, any given moment, among all the upscale stores, there are generally more people in the Apple store than in the other 50 or 60 stores total combined.
That's awesome. So over the last year, you know at least there's 12 people that's converted to the Mac that you've personally known.
Yes, and that's month to month to month.
That's awesome. What about you, Tommy?
Well, I wish I had better news, but being that I'm from South Carolina, there's a prejudice to Macs, not in the right way, but in the wrong way. You mentioned Macs around here, it's liable to get you shot.
Okay, who's messing with their microphone?
It was Russ.
Not me.
Yeah, that was Russ. Russ, stop it.
All I did was move.
That's all you have to do. We know,
Tim,
that microphone's implanted in your skull.
Can I get two quick comments about last week's podcast before I've got to go to a piano lesson?
Sure.
I thought it was the silence was deafening when you said, "Hey guys, have you seen my video that I did that I posted about the signature leather case?" And everybody said, "Yeah, I saw it." And that dead silence. Well, I want to go public. I wrote to Tim and I wrote to the staff. I think your video is excellent. The content, the audio, the camera work, and you did it all yourself. So I want to give you a real nice pat on the back for doing an excellent video, and I encourage you to do more of those one-man videos.
They were major props.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Really,
and we do have a lot more coming, too.
And not to be outdone, Guy Searle has posted part one of 1,000 parts, so I've heard.
Yeah.
Using iWeb 08 with a nice bunch of screenshots and a very breezy, relaxed style. So thank you and congratulations for getting us going with the tutorials on iWeb. You know I'm a nutcase on tutorials, and I think you got us off to a really great start there, Guy.
Well, I think breezy pretty much describes my thought pattern, so yeah.
And before you take off, John, I want to thank you for all the reviews that you've been posting lately. And we've got at least another 4 in the queue that's going to be going up next week. And, John's a reviewing machine. And some really nice stuff that you're looking at. I think a lot of stuff that Mac users and iPod users as well are going to be very interested in. So thanks a lot, John.
Thanks. It's very enjoyable. I love being on the show. I'll talk to everybody soon. Thanks a million.
All right, John.
Thanks. Bye, John.
Bye.
Yeah, I really wish I had more time to do reviews. It's sometimes, depending on what time of year it is and what's going on at my regular job, it's just hard to be able to sit down and spend, you know, the 20 to 30 hours it takes to really get to know some of these products.
And a lot of problems that I see with product reviews on other sites, a product will come out and literally is released on Monday.
Yeah, and they'll have a review the next day.
Like speakers. And 2 days later, there's a review up on a site. And I'm like, you know, there's just absolutely, positively no way you can review something thoroughly that quickly.
Thank you.
No.
Especially speakers. Speakers are a product that has to be broken in for at least a couple weeks because the cone inside the speaker system itself is going to get loose over time. And speakers are designed with that in mind. So the way they sound brand new, a set of speakers, is going to be totally different than the way they're going to sound, at least to the trained ear, a couple weeks later. So you really have to spend some time. You're going to be married to those speakers, and you're going to be listening to them often.
A lot.
In the first couple weeks. And and that's always kind of ticked me off, that you see products reviewed so early on other sites. And I'm not going to call out any names, but, you know, like an iPod case, for instance. You can just slip your iPod into it a few times and go, "Wow, this is a great case." Well, maybe it is, but I think you need to spend a little bit more time. For instance, the video that review that John was just talking about that I did, the first couple days that I used it was great. But as time went on, and I was putting this case in my pocket, and I mentioned this in the review a couple times, as I was pulling it out of my pocket, the top of it got bent.
You got to stop wearing those tight jeans.
Yeah, I tell you, or just lose some weight. That might help, too. So do you are you into doing a lot of product reviews, Tom, or is that something that – do you prefer Tom or Tommy?
Yeah, Tommy is fine. The thing about it is with me, I've done a lot of reviews, and back then I used to work for PC hardware sites back when I was a PC user. I worked for SystemLogic.net and PC Mechanic at one time. And I did a fair share of reviews there. And for low-end Mac, I've done iPod cases, accessories, that kind of thing. I have yet to do a review for mymac.com, but it's coming pretty soon, I hope. But I'm really into reviews because I think it gives the public, like you can't get to a store, can't find a suitable picture online. You take the pictures of the product, put it through its paces, and I agree with you. You need to spend time with it. You can't rush something like that. It's like an art. It's like spaghetti. You just can't rush it down, you know, because it'll come out the wrong way eventually, but it's the way it comes out. But anyway.
Now, Russ, you've been doing product reviews almost as long as I have.
Yep.
I mean, you started with MyMac.com, was it the very end of 95 or was it the beginning of 96?
Middle of 95.
Well, the middle of 95 is when I started it.
I think I got to you on the second. Oh, somebody missed the mic. Yeah,
no, that was me. I was reaching for the mouse, and it's between me and the mic stand, so that was my fault.
See, it isn't just me. It's catching.
That's true.
But the one thing I've learned is if you go to use something, your first impression can cloud your judgment. Because
yeah, you shouldn't base it on your first impression.
Because what you wind up doing is, oh, this is really neat, works really well. And if you do that in 2 days, what about a week later? What about 30 days later when all of a sudden it's not working properly? It stops doing what it's supposed to do? Or you discover something that even the company wasn't even aware of. You get back to them and you go, by the way, are you aware of that?
Yeah, that's actually happened to me a few times, and it's nice. In fact, I've got a review coming out next week. Usually, Russ edits my review, but I sent it out to John this time because it was a product he was somewhat familiar with as well. It's for an HP printer, and I wasn't the nicest to it because when you think of HP and printers, you have a high expectation, mm-hmm. and this is only $99 all in one unit. And I was expecting better prints than it's providing. Now, HP is very receptive to criticism. And I learned that from a couple camera reviews I've done with them, that the product managers themselves of that product actually emailed me. And they took my considerations and my criticisms into account on the next version of the program or the camera, which
made it a better camera.
I wish more companies did that. Now, I'm not saying that my reviews are, you know, the definitive ones, or and you got to listen to what I say because I'm always right.
You're not saying that
I'm not saying that because the reviews are very opinionated. You know, with a review, it's the reviewer's opinion more than anything else, whether he's an expert user or not.
But you just said the key word there, Tim: user.
Yes, and that's the way I think that we've always approached our reviews. Is from a user perspective, yes. Rather than, you know, a trade magazine or anything like that.
Well, speaking of trade magazines,
let me get this out real quick, Guy. Russ, your first article was in November of 95. Your first review was in January, February, March, April, May, June of 96. Do you know what that review was? It was hardware.
Do you know, I can't remember what I ate for dinner last week, and you want to know what I wrote in 96?
iOmega Zip Drive.
Do you know I still have iOmega Zip Drives?
Do you really? Do you have the original one, or has it been replaced?
I still have the original one, but I did get a replacement USB one that works absolutely mm-hmm. great.
Go ahead,
Guy. I was just going to say, you were talking about trade magazines. I finally bit the bullet and accepted the fact that it was going to cost a bit more than other trade magazines, but I took a subscription to Mac Format magazine, which is an English publication. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, you're going to spend a little more money on that than you would on Macworld or MacLife, but just on the two issues I've gotten so far, it is a spectacular magazine.
Isn't it great?
And it's got a DVD that's just chock full of really, really useful stuff. You know, Mac Addict used to put out that CD, but half right. of what was on that CD was just crap.
Yep.
Junk, yeah. And a lot of people say, well, why do you need to put a CD with a magazine nowadays? Because, you know, most people, I don't say most, but a lot of people have high-speed internet access. It doesn't take anything to download. Well, when it comes on a magazine subscription, for instance, it's right yep. there. You're much more apt to check it out if it's on that CD than you are to
look
go
for it.
Download it, or, you know, look at the magazine, get the URL and type it into your browser and then go there. And, you know, that's just a pain in the butt. But no, I agree with you. And the only reason I found out about Mac Format, unfortunately for me, was because they featured us on
Atari Mac.
And they called us one of the top five podcasts for Mac users to get. I think there was only five available at the time, so we scooped in on that one.
You know, Tim, don't you remember back in the late 90s? I was overseas for a month-long assignment, and I picked up Mac Format overseas, And one of the things that jumped out at me was on the CD was,
oh, that's right,
they had the MyMac issues before
that's right.
It came online.
I remember that. That was more Mac
yes,
format.
Yes, it is.
Wasn't
I still
it?
Have that issue.
I think you made a copy of that CD because I've got a copy of that CD and it had like, I don't know, 15, 16 issues of MyMac
yep.
magazine on their CD, which we thought, holy crap, that's cool.
Oh, and before I forget, going through some of my stuff on some of my hard drives here, I came across this great audio file of you from 1999 that you...
I think I played it on the show, didn't I?
Was this the one
ago?
About doing the audio and posting it online?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. Did you hear that, Tommy?
No, I this first I've heard of it.
Well, go ahead and explain it, Russ.
Tim sent out to some of the people on the staff an audio file
MP3.
That explained his idea. This is back in 99. Of doing audio reviews, stories, and posting them online that people may be interested in this new form rather than just the written word.
So basically I was describing podcasting in 1999.
So you invented podcasting.
No, yep, only possibly. If I would have
done anything with it.
Yeah, if I had actually done something with the idea.
Instead of just recording it and saying, okay, that's done, next thing.
The following year, 2000, an idea popped up that Ronnie O'Lane, the dearly departed Ronnie O'Lane, for those who don't know, and you might be one of these guys, Tommy, is that Ronnie O'Lane was a very popular Mac writer, very controversial, and a good friend of mine. We were going to do an MP3 audio show. And the biggest problem was actually talking to each other and figuring out a way to record it because there was really no voice
right.
over
no Skype,
internet
no iChat.
No, exactly. Well, no. So we had figured out a way to record a telephone conversation, bring it into the computer, convert it to MP3 and post it. We just never went ahead and did it. So and it's kind of funny because on a few ideas I have been way ahead of the masses, but just none of them ever came to pass.
It could have been called a My Mac cast instead of a podcast.
That's right. I could have been a millionaire right now.
Could have been the podcast.
Well, who knows? The next one will come along, and then you just don't sit on your butt.
Right.
Well, the next one already kind of came along, and that is the podcast game show, which I still own the URL to. I haven't done anything with it yet because it's been a little hectic here lately with the baby on the way the end of next month.
No stress there.
And then with the job situation with between me and my wife, what we're going to do, who's going to stay home, who's going to go to work, and quite honestly, being sick over the last month or so, being ill, really hasn't fostered an attitude of mine to get creative and start a second project outside of MyMac.com that's going to take up a lot of time. So it's not that I've forgotten about it. I'm still going to do it. It's just going to take a little bit longer to get there than I had envisioned.
Congrats
of course
on the new baby, by the way.
Thank you. It's going to be a boy. His name is going to be Cole.
Cool.
What were you saying,
I was going to say the absolute next idea past podcasting will be beaming it directly into your brain. So everyone will have to have a great big tinfoil hat and a little antenna sticking up. And
you don't have one now?
It won't be an RSS feed. It'll be a BSS feed. Brain Simple Syndication.
Dude.
I posted a blog up on MyMac.com on October 9th. And it's called Old Hard Drives. I was going through what I had done. I gave a brother-in-law my dual processor G5 or G4, 500 megahertz dual processor. It's a good machine. I had it sitting here next to the G5 for a long time acting as a file server, but it was... I've got so many external hard drives, it was really unnecessary. So I copied all the data off of it before I erased it and gave it to him and showed him how to use it. But I was going through a lot of the data that was sitting on that G4 forever, and a lot of that data was migrated from older Macs and older ZIP disks and older CD-ROMs and that sort of thing. And one of the graphics I found was a lot of the pictures that we used to use in My Mac magazine and I posted that up online as a blog post. And it's just amazing at some of the original artwork that we've had over the years at MyMac. I mean, we've been around a long, long time. And I'm looking at a lot of this artwork, and I wish there was some way I could still use it. It's just, it doesn't really fit in with
what we're doing anymore. Some of it was dated.
Yeah. But still, it's kind of neat to look back. And that's the nice thing about what we do at MyMac.com, and I really need to get back into this, is posting some weekend archive stuff.
Call it RetroMac.
Which is RetroMac, there you go. Or low-end Mac.
Nope, can't do that.
Some of the stuff that we've been writing about for literally over a decade, there's a lot of stuff out there. I mean, Russ has done some interviews with some very interesting people over the years, and that's all up on our archives. I mean, if you just go to archives and then go down to Russ's name, you're going to find reviews of old products. You're going to find interviews that he did with very, very interesting people. It's just, I think it's amazing how much content we have that's up there.
I just need to find some really strange people to interview.
Well, you know, I always like the people that you chose to interview, Russ, because a lot of them, I mean, you've done interviews with Pogue and Guy Kawasaki and stuff like that as far as text interviews, but you helped me with the Jeff Raskin interview, I remember that, the father of the Macintosh. But then you'd have someone named Clarence Thomas.
Yes.
Or Chance Thomas,
the composer.
Chance Thomas. Yep. And who would have thought to interview him?
Russ would.
And yeah, and those interviews were just fantastic.
The cartoonist who did Norm.
Yes, exactly. He actually did a custom cartoon for you, didn't he?
He sent it to you and you never forwarded it.
It's on that G4. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, what was his? Michael Jans?
Yes.
Jans, something like that? Yep, that was in 1997. So, for anybody listening is interested in the history of the Macintosh, we have a huge back catalog of articles that really kind of show you where the Mac's been over the last decade and a half almost at this point, that I think is very interesting to read. It shows you how far we've come as a community of Mac
users.
Well,
not only that, but it takes you like through the dark ages.
Absolutely, because My Mac magazine was started right before the true dark ages started.
And
you know what's cool too? You know what's cool too? I was going to mention this just a minute ago. I haven't done that many articles for MyMac.com for obvious reasons, but I also write for Low End Mac, and between our two sites, Low End Mac and MyMac, MyMac is really the only website that I can think of, unless I'm missing one, that's actually older than Low End Mac, because it got its start in 97. But between the two sites, there's a lot of history there at a time when there wasn't many Mac sites to be seen, and they both come up in the dark ages of Apple.
Or as many users.
Well, Macintosh started a month before we did.
X only.
And he's still around. But that's all user-generated content. They've never really had too much original content at Macintosh.
How about Macs only?
No, we're older than Macs only. What was the other? And Tidbits. But Tidbits has been around for over 20 years at this point. They are the granddaddy of the digital Macintosh press. I mean, they used to write that, put it in text documents, and distribute it via floppy disk. I mean, they've been around a long time. And you got to take your hat off to Tidbits, because they're still going just as strong, if not stronger, than they've ever done.
Is it still the original owners?
Yeah. It's Tanya and Adam Angst. They're still doing it. And it's still a fantastic read. If you're not familiar with Tidbits, definitely check them out. It's a fantastic site. And their whole ebook initiative is, you know, the whole take control thing. That's Tidbits. That's who's doing that. And that's taken off brilliantly. So, but anyways, we've got a lot of stuff up at MyMac.com right now. John Nemo did a review of a combo drive that you can plug in your hard drive to. And it's he for instant iPod data recovery. It looks pretty interesting. He also did some, Comply Chomp earbud enhancers, which I don't know. I don't like little rubber things stuck too far down in my ear. That's just me. Using iWeb08, I changed the name of your article. I don't know if you
well, now, that. Come on. You were the one that originally said it should be using or iWeb08, making sites that don't suck. So the fact that you changed it is like, okay, well.
Well, I was trying to figure out a name that would blend in more with the site. And since John Farr had done using Dreamweaver just a couple weeks before, I thought, well, we'll just use using as part of the title, and it kind of blends in a little bit better that way, I thought.
Okay, I know. It's fine. No big deal.
So part one is up. I have part two getting ready to go through the editing process, and then that will be posted next week.
And all of the graphics were under 500 pixels.
Yeah, but I noticed that there's like 14 parts of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of the problem is that, you know, you're talking about the individual pieces. And I guess I went kind of screenshot crazy and was grabbing every single little piece that I could find within iWeb and slamming it in there.
As a website publisher, when you get an email and it says 19 attachments, you're like, duh!
But it wasn't that big.
No, it wasn't. But it's still 19 attachments. John Nemirovsky, like he was talking about earlier, did that Orb M Station review. It looks kind of like a big green apple.
Yeah, that is kind of weird looking.
That is. He also did the Tune Pro flat panel speaker review, which I'm actually going to do a video review of. I've still got that from McAlley. And Bakari did a review of Photoshop Lightroom Adventure. It's a book review. And the chick that's on that book cover is just gorgeous.
Oh, she's smoking hot.
Did you see that? Oh, you should see a larger picture. It's just
please, may I? Out. May I please?
May I see a larger picture?
I want to see a larger
and,
picture.
And, of course, at the top is this show.
Or it will be.
We're going to wrap up our segment because we actually have a fenestration for this week.
Oh, you managed to get it in time.
Well, he said he reposted it, and it was my fault that it wasn't on last week's show. So, but it is here on show 148, and we're going to drop that in a second. But I wanted to first thank John Nemo, who left us early. Thanks for coming on the show, John. Russ Walkowicz, as always, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Tommy, it's nice having you on the show for the first time, and again, welcome to MyMac.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And Guy Searle, as always. Thanks, Guy.
Yeah, I kind of pushed my way in.
Now we next week, I'm not quite sure what's happening next week. We're hoping to set up the show. It may be Chad Perry may be back for 1 week. He was actually available this week. I just didn't want to have to drag all the equipment over there.
Well, just let me know ahead of time if you need me.
Yeah,
or
kind of
if you
being
yeah.
the guy.
Okay, all right, I'll just count on.
We're trying to set up a show with John Farr and Beth Locke.
Ooh, that would be a good show.
So that should be an excellent show. I'm hoping that it works out. You never know. But in the meantime, we're done here. We're going to jump over to Fenestration now, and thanks for listening.
Hello. My name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. In this week's session, I'm going to spend some time commenting on the news that Microsoft released this week about Microsoft Office 2008 for Macintosh. Microsoft announced that this product will be available in the US from January the 15th of 2008, which happens to be the first day of Macworld Expo. And they also announced it would be available in most of the other major markets around the world during the first quarter of 2008. Office will come in three versions. There's a basic package, a home and student edition, and a special media edition. The basic package is what you would expect from Office 2004, effectively turned into the 2008 version. So you get Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Entourage, which is the application that talks to Microsoft Exchange Server. The Home and Student Edition is targeted at consumers and students, as the name suggests, and will be available with a special 3-machine license. However, while it will ship with the same applications as the Basic Edition, the version of Entourage that will ship with the Home and Student Edition will not be able to talk to Microsoft Exchange Server. It will just be a generic mail client. Finally, there'll be a Special Media Edition, which comes with all the same software, but also includes something called Expression Media for Mac, which apparently is a media management application. Pricing will be broadly the same as currently for Office 2004. The basic edition is $400, Home and Student is $150, and the Special Media Edition is $500. There's some upgrade prices available as well, but it's worth pointing out that if you buy Office 2004 between now and January 15th, 2008, you'll be able to get an upgrade to Office 2008 for basically the price of sending you the new CDs. There is a website available from Microsoft that gives a preview of the applications. I'll include a link in the show notes, but having had a look through it and bearing in mind my previous comments about Office 2008, I wasn't overly impressed. There's an awful lot of emphasis on WYSI templates and graphics, the ability to create charts that can read dynamically, reconfigure themselves on the fly as you change data, and there's a new thing in Entourage called My Today or My Day that effectively is a widget that sits on your desktop. It's not a formal dashboard widget, but it's an application that sits on your desktop and gives you a summary of what's going on in your calendar and your email at any one time with Entourage. However, all of these things are pretty much glossy froth and don't really give any sort of substance. The emphasis on design elements is a bit odd. I always believe you should play to your strengths, and I'm sure many of you will agree that one thing that Microsoft is not particularly good at is at producing really nice-looking templates. And the thing with templates and graphic inserts and all of those sorts of things is that they're only really any good to you if you can use them as a starting point and effectively recustomize them so the documents look like something you created rather than something that Microsoft created. We have no information from Microsoft on this point about how easy it's going to be to customize these templates and these wizards. It's also worth commenting, I think, that these sorts of elements are the sorts of things that iWork does very, very well. And iWork is a hell of a lot cheaper than Office 2008 is. As I said, the basic version of Office will cost $400, whereas the current version of iWork, which, you know, I would argue does a better job at these sorts of page layout type things, is available for less than $100. No word from Microsoft as yet on the things that we have been complaining about over the last 6 to 12 months as this product's been delayed. So there's no word about VBA compatibility or what they're going to do to bring in an alternative to Visual Basic. There's no word about how the Office conversion stuff is going to work. There's no word about Office 2004 compatibility for the Office 2007 open XML formats. I could go on. One other observation to make is this Special Media Edition at $500. That's an extra $100 over the standard version of Office 2008, and this comes with an application we've not seen called Expression Media for Mac. Now, apparently this is a media management application, and as soon as I heard that, I immediately asked myself, what actually has Microsoft been smoking? You get very good digital asset management applications built into Macs when you buy OS X. You get iTunes for audio, you get GarageBand for creating audio, you get iPhoto for your photos, you've got iMovie and iDVD for editing video. So it's hard to understand really what a new application from Microsoft might be able to bring to the party. Of course, we'll have to reserve judgment until we actually see the application. But again, looking at the price of the application, it's an extra $100 on top of a basic version of Office. Well, that's more than you would pay for the iLife suite. So it really has to be a pretty serious application in order to justify that extra expense. If you read the MacMojo blog, which is a blog that Microsoft developers in the Mac business unit use to feed information back to us consumers, they all think they're doing a cracking job on Office 2008. And they harp on about all these fantastic features they've put in. And yet they always say, even though they say they're listening to their consumers, they gloss over a lot of these criticisms and complaints that have been made over the last 12 months while this product's been extremely delayed. There's not a lot of time between now and January 15th for Microsoft to actually straighten all of this out and give us a product that hopefully will be worth buying. So it'll be interesting to see how things develop in the future. As for me, at the moment, I'm not currently holding my breath. That's going to do it for this session. As always, please send questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Once again, thanks for downloading the MyMac podcast, number 148. As always, we welcome your feedback at 1-801-938-5559. You can call that from any telephone, including your iPhone. Tell us what you think of the show, what you think's going on in the Mac world. Tell us if you're looking forward to macOS 10.5 Leopard and why you're looking forward to it. Hey, if your iPhone bricked and you're kind of ticked off about that, we'd like to hear about that too. And John was talking about his iPod Classic and CoverFlow. If you've upgraded your software and it's working good for you, we'd love to hear about it. Again, the number is 1-801-938-5559. If you don't want to leave a voice message, we'll take email, tim@mymac.com. That's the email address. Send it to me, and we'll read it right here on the show. And we appreciate you guys downloading the show, and have a great weekend.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.